Well, some great questions in the break. I now know that the speakers don't get a break.
Sorry about that.
No, I love it. I love it. Let me just tell a couple more stories, and then I'm going to be cognizant of our time so that we have time for questions. Remember I told you to take note of the one guy, I don't know if you remember, he had kind of bushy hair and glasses, and he was sitting with his daughter, a younger lady. I met him, and I'm embarrassed to say he's the one person on the Camino I didn't like. Like right from the start. You would hike all day long, you'd find your accommodations. Many of you asked me about accommodations. There's a lot of different ways to do it. We started by going to the hostels, which are, they're called in Spanish, albergues or shelters. And they're, you know, 100 people to a room and bunk beds. And we did that for 10 nights and decided we were too old for that nonsense. And then you could get a private room within an albergue, which were very Spartan. I mean, the Trappists would have felt comfortable in one of these places. But it was at least two beds, and you'd share a bathroom with, you know, maybe four rooms instead of 100 people. And then there were things more like B&Bs that you could do, and we did those occasionally. And then we had two rest days in two of the bigger cities and stayed in a really nice hotel and just took a day off. So that's how the accommodations work. We did not plan ours ahead. We just kind of took what came as part of the Camino, at least for the first third. Then we'd start to call a day ahead. Just it made it better for us. But anyway, I met this guy. His name is Dave. I'll use his real name here. And I'll change a few of the details of his life. But and he just was kind of a grump. I don't know how you go out for dinner with fellow pilgrims in the town. You know, you're not sleeping in tents and you're not cooking over fires. You go out to these nice little places and eat. And you talk to other pilgrims who are on the way. And so Dave was sitting across. Hey, Dave, how are you? Okay, great. So tell me where are you from? Texas. Yeah, what do you do there? I'm a doctor. I'm retired, but I'm a doctor. Well, you're a real conversationalist, aren't you? I just can't wait to talk more with you, you know. And anyway, I just didn't like the guy. I'm sorry, you know, we're all human, and I just didn't like him. I just kind of thought, well, I maybe won't see him the next day. And so I'm hiking the next day, and Art gets his little gaggle of people, and they go on up ahead, and I'm finally all alone, which is what I liked. And I didn't see anybody in front. I didn't see anybody in back. And then, you know, you're out there in the middle of nowhere, and it's not like you can stop into Starbucks to use the restroom. And so you use the baño del mundo, which is just the bathroom of the world. And so you find a tree. And so I kind of go off this little ridge line of trees and go off. And then after I've finished what I needed to do, I'm kind of looking around, enjoying the sights and everything. Just gorgeous. The birds, there's nobody anywhere near. I come back down this ridge line. Come back out onto the Camino, and literally just as I hit there, Dave is there. And I'm going, oh, I'm thinking in the spirit of Christ, oh no, you know, not him. And then I said, oh, hi, Dave. Well, you always say buen camino, which is a beautiful thing. It means have a good pilgrimage, have a good journey. You say that to everybody you see, and everybody you see says it to you. It's just fast. It's just beautiful. And I said, buen camino, buen camino. And then I'm hoping, this is my other Jesus-like thought, I'm thinking, well, maybe he hikes faster than I do, you know. No, exact same pace. And he's saying nothing, and it's kind of awkward. And then I think, okay, let's try this again. And I said, Dave, tell me, why'd you come on the Camino? And I'm expecting a one-word answer. And he says, do you really want to know? I said, yeah, we got like 8 miles here to go. yeah, I'd really like to know. And he says, well, and his whole story spills out. I'm going to tell it to you. He says, I'm an orthopedic surgeon from such and such a town in Texas. And I'm a workaholic. I mean, I just love what I do. I work. I'm really good at what I do. I'm the head of our practice. I'm kind of known in town. And I'm a charging kind of guy, and I love to do nothing better than surgery. I just love doing surgery. And And he said, I was in my office one day, and I was looking over some charts and reading some things, and all of a sudden I noticed that my vision was blurry. So I went to down to the ophthalmologist in our clinic, and he said, well, let's see what's going on here. He gave me some tests, dilated my eyes. And when he walked back in the room, Dave says, he was kind of ashen, the other doctor. He says, Dave, I don't know how to tell you this, but you're losing your sight in that eye, and you will lose it. And he told him the technical name for it, and there's nothing we can do. You will be blind in that one eye. And he said, in that moment, I lost my job, I lost my career, I lost my identity. You can't be a one-eyed surgeon, it doesn't work. He said, I lost everything. I went home, told my family. And he said, 2 weeks later, my wife left me. And he said, I don't blame her. I'd been a jerk. I hadn't been home. I hadn't been a good father. I hadn't been a good husband. I was married to my practice. And so within 2 weeks, I lost everything. I said, my kids didn't like me much either. They were adults by this time. And he said, what'd you do? He says, I was totally depressed. I went into complete depression. I asked my adult son, could I go with you on, his son is an academic, could I go with you on this trip you're going on to India where he was doing an academic conference? And the son kind of said, well, yeah, sure, I mean, come along. And he said, so I'm in India with my son. The son's speaking at this conference. I'm not interested in that particular subject. And so he said, I'd just go hang out in this tea shop in India. And into this tea shop walks an Indian man, very dark-skinned, but oddly, the guy had green eyes. And I said, green eyes? I mean, I've been to India. I've never seen anybody with green eyes. He said, I'm telling you, the guy had beautiful green eyes, and he was a charismatic personality. And I was watching him across the cafe, and people would come to him and talk to him, and he'd be laughing and telling stories. Everybody knew him, and it was just, he said, I finally had on the second or third day, I just got up the nerve to go introduce myself. And I said, can I join you? And the guy said, of course, sit down. And they have this ongoing conversation. The guy says, well, are you new here? As if it didn't show. And he says, let me show you around our city. So the next day or two, the green-eyed man takes Dave around all over in this Indian community and home-cooked meals and all kinds of fun things. And finally, Dave says, I decided to tell him my story. The same story I just told you. And I said, what happened? He says, well, I told him, the doctor said I was going to lose my sight. He said, he kind of looked down, and then I said, that means I lose my job. And he says, at that moment, the green-eyed man kind of, I thought he was almost chuckling. And then I said, and then I did lose my job, and then my wife left me. And about the time I told him my wife left me, he started laughing. And then I said, and my kids don't like me either. And he said he starts howling and hitting the table. He's going, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And he's laughing his head off. And Dave says, I was literally about to strangle him. I was so angry. And then I hear what he's saying through his laughter. He's going, Dave. The gods must think you're very special. And Dave is saying, special my blank. They hate me if there are gods. And the guy's laughing now. He's probably falling out of his seat going, the gods must think you're so special. Look at all the trouble they went to get your attention. And he said, he literally snapped his finger and he said, my life changed in that second. And God had gotten my attention. And he said, I went back home. I wasn't a religious man. And I decided, I'm going to meet with some people that know about God and don't talk a lot. So he started meeting with Quakers. Good choice. And he said, and they started reading books. And then he and I said, well, who helped you, guide you in this time? And I love this. He said, everyone was my teacher. Everyone. And then he was full of joy. I'm thinking, this is the guy I didn't like. I mean, And then it turns out he and I were reading some Robert Johnson books, Jungian psychologist. I'm going, nobody's ever heard of this guy. And you're, he said, yeah, I'm reading this one called He. And I'm going, I just read that one. And all of a sudden, we're having this great conversation. So two things happen to me here. I realize how small my frame of reference is when judging other people. I judged him on his conversational ability. At the first dinner, he was probably tired. I didn't know his story. If we hadn't had this, what I think was just a miraculous coming together, which I was fighting every inch of the way, kind of the story of my journey in life, I think. And then God opens up this beautiful, beautiful connection. And then the second thing was his actual statement. Look how the gods think you're so special. They've gotten your attention. What if we looked at some of the darkness, what we call dark, some of the tragedies we've all been through, a big one right here, some of the personal struggles we have, some of the betrayals we've experienced, whatever it may be. What if we began to look and say, is God or the gods trying to get my attention? And if they are, how can I open myself more? So that was one story. Last one I'll tell is... maybe. I remember I said, look at this one guy hiking. It probably went too fast. It's near the end of the Camino. I'm hiking alone. I'm a pretty slow hiker. Art was a very fast hiker. And so I always felt a little bad about that. I'm not really very fast. I'm steady, but not very fast. And I see this guy down in front of me, and I'm gaining on him. I'm going, not bad, you know. He's stronger than you thought, you know. And I'm thinking, I'm actually going to pass this guy. This is a new experience for me. And I'm going past him, and I see he's a guy about my age. And then I notice he's got something wrapped around his right leg. And I'm thinking, oh, I think the guy may have hurt himself, and he's got it wrapped, which made me feel like not quite as strong and macho as I was seeing myself at the moment. And I said, buen camino, and he said, buen camino. And then I tried something in Spanish, and he didn't understand Spanish. And then I tried English, and then he answered me in French. I don't speak French. And then we kind of went back to Spanishy something or other. And I tried to say to him in Spanish very slowly, I'm really sorry, it looks like you hurt your knee. And I was impressed that he was, you know, hiking the Camino with a hurt knee. And he looked over at me, he was standing here, and he looked over at me, and he kind of had this wry smile. And then he lifted that leg, I'll do it with this leg, he lifted the leg and it went like this. And it was a prosthetic leg. He was an amputee. He was hiking, probably a 65-year-old man. I said, where did you start? He said, Saint-Jean-de-Pied-de-Port, where I started. This was like 5 weeks earlier. He had hiked over two mountain ranges on this leg. And I'm thinking, I'm so much better because I'm going faster. You talk about when you walk the earth, there's a humility that has to set in if you open your heart. It just does that. You just it seeps into you. Last thing is this one. We did have a little fellowship along the way. I mean, you get a gaggle of people and you wind up being in the same town each night and you get to know each other. There were two women in the slides there. One was had an AA patch on her back, so on her backpack. So she was a 12-step person. And she was there sprinkling the ashes of her late husband along the way. And she got so upset at one point because she wouldn't take care of her feet. And Art kept trying to help her because he's a real expert on mountaineering. And she just wouldn't take his advice. So they got worse and worse and worse. And she wanted to hike every inch of this thing. And finally her feet got so bad she couldn't. And she knew if she dropped out for a few days, she'd miss the fellowship that had been going along. So it was very difficult for her, but she decided to take a cab the next few days so that she could be with this kind of group that had informally come together. And I remember saying, we were saying, why didn't she take care of her feet? Why didn't she take care of her feet? And someone, I don't remember who, said, this is part of her Camino. She thought she was going to do it all on her own. And now part of her Camino is the humility to say, I didn't take care of my feet, and therefore I'm not going to get to do it. My Camino is going to look different than I had planned. And that's my Camino. And that's become a phrase for me in talking to others, thinking about other people's lives, family, friends, people I don't know that well. Every once in a while, when I'm getting all exercised about what they're doing, I'll say, that's their Camino. You know, it's not my Camino. I may be hiking alongside them for a while. So thousands of people do the Camino, but they're all having separate Caminos. And that's what it's like in life, I think. You know, everybody is on a journey. People ask me all the time, how did you feel at the end of 500 miles? And they're expecting me to say, exhausted, couldn't wait to get home. I wanted to keep walking. That if I could have, I would have. I would have just kept walking. Because it simplified life. And that phrase, be still and know that I am God. We don't take the time. I don't take the time. Or didn't. I do now, actually. To be still. And I think you get to know yourself. You get to know others. And you get to know God. Through every single thing. Linda and I have been saying to each other, she taught me this, though, that God is always coming toward us in love through everything, all the time. If you believe that, God is always coming toward you in love through everything, good and bad, all the time. How could it be any different if there is a God? A God of love? Wouldn't that be exactly what that God of love would be doing? Then can he get your attention? Can she get your attention? Can the Spirit of the Divine get your attention? So I think that's all I have to share, except at the very end, I'm going to share one other thing, but I'm going to open it for questions, observations, comments. Oh, Richard Rohr, I got a couple of great quotes from chapter 20. Thank you. That was my assignment, wasn't it? It's exactly what I planned, Anna. Thank you. Listen to these four quotes, because they really summarize. I love Richard Rohr. I love his writings. He says this in chapter 20. Many Christians have seen the world as largely inert, non-enchanted, and unholy, even dangerous or evil, as if God's creation could be separate from God. God is good, so how could his creation be evil or inert? And then he goes on to say, God seems to be concerned to communicate himself or herself as endless, multitudinous beauty, love, and fecundity. That is a great statement. God is communicating him or herself as endless, multitudinous beauty, love, and fecundity. And he points out in the very beginning of his article that the first incarnation, those of you who come from a Christian tradition believe that Jesus is the incarnation of God, but the first incarnation was the creation of the world. Jesus is the human incarnation, and that's what Rohr says. The incarnation actually happened, Rohr says, 14.5 billion years ago. God actually decided to materialize and to expose who God is. 2,000 years ago marked the human incarnation of God in Jesus. And then I had one more somewhere in my very detailed notes. Hold on. There it is. Spiritual ecology is about a shift in consciousness, a return to the sacred that embraces and infuses all of creation rather than a soulless materialistic world. It envisions a living universe resonant with wonder and meaning. That's what I felt on the Camino. I was in a universe resonant with wonder and meaning. One of my favorite poets, John O'Donohue, did a 9 or 10 part series on beauty. And I listened to it on the Camino. It's the only reading that I listened to. And in it, he made this tremendous point. He said, for those from the Christian tradition, we believe that all of creation, including human creation, is made in God's image. And we've tended to think of that as you have intelligence, you have emotion, and you have will, those three things. But he said, how about imagination? Look around the universe. Is God imaginative? I mean, think about an aardvark. I mean, good grief. Or a porcupine. Or, I mean, who dreamed this up? Or how about color? Anteaters. Giraffes. I mean, people. Look at you. Look at you. God is full of imagination. So if we're created in God's image, we should be have our imaginations expanding, not contracting. And so much of religion contracts our imagination instead of expanding it. Who's in? Who's out? Who's got the right doctrines? Who's got the wrong ones? Who has this politics or that politics? And I think as we connect with the earth, we're connecting with the image of God. And that creates an expansive, spacious wonder, awe, creativity, imagination, growth. Okay, now we'll open up for some questions. Or, yeah, I'm going to do that the last 5 minutes, which is in about 10 minutes. Yeah, come to the mic. That way it'll be recorded.
I'd like to talk about a mini pilgrimage that happened last Sunday and has to do with what you're talking about. I didn't think of it as a pilgrimage until I heard what you were saying. It was a totally spontaneous thing in our church. Our rector, Amy, said, I think I would like to take communion to the Bucket Brigade, which is working in Montecito Oaks. Any volunteers? So there were six of us.
Beautiful.
Well, here was a place not more than a mile and a half from my home, which looks as unlike as any place I'd ever seen in my life. Piles of mud as high as people's houses, furniture strewn every which way, refrigerators sitting out by the side of the road. The mud was beginning to turn into dust. So as we walked along, there were these little clouds of dust. And these stalwart people here with shovels digging out and helping all the homeowners. Well, there we are in our church clothes, carrying our silver chalices and our little bowls with the wafers in them. Anybody want communion? First, we set up a little table and put things on it, like a lemonade stand or something. But we didn't have any takers, so we decided to march through these little dusty streets. Anybody want communion? Well, we only had three takers, and they were all women, as you can imagine they might be. Everybody else was...
Wait, I
no,
would have taken
you.
It if
no,
I...
No, thank you. I got the feeling what they really wanted was a cold beer. But anyway,
I could see that
we
too.
Went on, and then we changed our tactics towards about the middle of it. And we still asked if anybody wanted communion, but if they said no thanks, and they all did, we said, well, would you like a blessing? Everybody wanted
a
blessing.
Wow.
And I came away from that, covered with dust, of course, thinking, now what does all that mean? And I ended up thinking, you have to meet people where they are.
Beautiful.
The idea that we were out of place, we were in Congress, and I was kind of giggling to myself at the time, thinking how odd we must look to these people who are working so hard. We're carrying these wonderful silver vessels up and down the dusty streets. But a blessing is something simple enough for everybody to understand.
Beautiful.
And to everybody knew that that's exactly what they needed at this time.
It's wonderful.
So I'm going to carry that away with me, the idea of meeting people where they are, forgetting the dogma and the ritual from time to time, although I love it in church. It didn't belong there, walking up these dusty streets. But the blessing did.
Well, and I would say you guys were the sacrament. You were the living sacrament, the Word made flesh. Yeah. But also the humility of your insight to start asking for, would you like a blessing? To bring it, I don't mean down as though that's less than, but to bring it to a place where they feel comfortable. When we worked in Washington, D.C. and with leaders around the world, I would often ask a leader, you know, whether, and, you know, these are high leaders, you know, some of them heads of state, is there anything I can pray about for you? I never got turned down. they were delighted to be prayed for. And if, also the other thing I'd found is if I asked them about their family, tell me about your family. It didn't matter if it was a president, a senator, a cab driver. Everybody has a family. Everybody wants to share about that. Other thoughts here.
Well, I was very moved by the story of your journey. And I've been wanting to go on the Camino for some years, and perhaps I will finally arrive there. But meanwhile, the Camino has been on my mind. And it occurred to me that the Camino is a sort of archetype of life.
Absolutely.
And one of the aspects of that archetype of life is that we can see much further than we can reach. And that
beautiful.
Makes us all pilgrims
That's
on the
beautiful.
Road of life. And especially in our time, we can imagine justice and reconciliation way beyond what is taking place
beautiful.
In the world today. And that makes us really pilgrims on the road toward compassion.
Wow.
So thank you for
Brilliant.
Reminding me.
Brilliant. You know, when we were on the Camino, we kept coming, we thought, we just went, is there anything about this that isn't a metaphor for all of life? And now you're giving me a new one. That is, one of the things I loved, I tried to point it out in the show, is we never retraced our steps, so we could often see where we were going. And at one level, it was a little depressing. If you wanted to look at that, like 15 miles ahead is a long way. You can only see really, in this setting, probably 6 or 7 miles. And then you'd see 5 or 6 miles behind you. But it's exactly what you just said, Dennis. You can see further than you can reach. But one step at a time, you can actually reach it. I mean, now maybe it won't be us individually, but we're interconnected. That was one of the things from the readings I loved, is the interconnectedness of the ecology in the interconnectedness of human beings. That when Jesus said on his last night, he said, I pray that they might be one as we are one, Father. I think that was maybe primarily a relational oneness, but we are related to the earth as well and the earth to us. Okay, I want to close with one other thing that happened to me. I came home and I met Linda in Denver. And we go on a vacation every summer in western Colorado. And we have a friend there who is an artist. His name is Stephen Quiller, a very gifted, very well-known, actually internationally known artist. And he has a gallery in this little town in the middle of Colorado where he's from. And I went in, and I didn't know him real well, but we've known him for a long period of time, but not at a deep level. And I told him about the Camino and what I'd come in. And I said, Stephen, I know one thing. I've had this awakening. Beauty heals. It started healing me. Just letting it soak in. And I said, I have this crazy thought. I'd like to put color on paper. That's all I know. And that was literally all I knew. And he said, oh, I'll sell you some paper and some paints and a little video on how to do it. And he says, are you a painter? Did you used to paint? I said, yeah, actually. The last painting I did was in kindergarten, and it's a finger painting. And so he says, so you're not coming back to... I said, I don't even want to be an artist. I just want to put color on. That's all I know. So I get... He sells me all this. I said, give me some good stuff. So he gives me some good paints. We come home, and they sat there in my garage for about a month because I didn't even know what to do. So I called my daughter and granddaughters. Granddaughters were probably 16 and 17 then. They came over, we put it out. My daughter said, here, we're going to show you how to do wet on wet. Well, I have no idea what that means. My granddaughter says, Appa, let's start with the primary colors. I said, great. She said, you know what the primary colors are, right? Okay, I have no idea. So they started to show me, the first time I mixed, I don't remember exactly which colors they were, but mixed these two colors together. And had it turn into another color, just magically. I was hooked, and I became awakened to the joy of art. So,
now this isn't about my art, but
awakening in me that came from walking on the earth for 37 days with nothing else to do. And so now I can't seem to stop. So I'm just going to put a few of these up. And then I have one more, which is not mine, but I've gotten to know a whole new community of artists. I didn't know a community of artists. And thank heavens. Oh, thank heavens these artists don't know that I'm a pastor. Otherwise, they'd freak out. You know. And so I just tell them I'm semi-retired and I paint. And one of these artists started coming to our congregation. And I didn't know she was an artist, actually. She just came to our congregation, came back to church for the first time in 40 years. She's probably my age. And she asked Linda, show me Bart's favorite photograph from the Camino. And it's one you saw of me walking down a long road, and it's the Camino draping off into the, and you're looking at my back, at my green backpack. So she painted a painting. When I got up to preach one Sunday, this painting was in below the pulpit. No one could see it but me. And I'm going to put it in the center here. And she said to me, I was just finishing it and I was going to paint in your backpack, but I kind of like it with that being invisible. But if you want me to paint it in, I will. I said, don't touch it. I said, for me, it means I'm becoming one with my journey. I'm actually becoming one with God, one with the earth, one with my own true self, as opposed to this ego-driven self. So, oh, that's a great point. Yeah, it's a little smaller, though, thank heavens. No. I think that's it for me, so I'm not sure how we end here, but...
There's somebody else who wanted to ask. Agnes. Come here. When did you do this?
When did I do what? May 4th, 2015. 2.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to stay around if you want to ask questions about the Camino. I'd be happy to answer them.
I'm so glad you told that about the paintings because... Who was it that told, was it Jay Philip who said the closer and the deeper we grow spiritually, the more creative we get? And I've seen that happen in you since you came home, and Bart's an incredible artist. His work is all over town. In fact, if you go to the Cancer Center, it's up on the walls, and it's many, yes.
When I went to Bart's house to help him get hooked up for this show, we talked a little bit about art, and I shared with him that Ann and I did the Camino our way, which is by car, but stopping along the way, in places that had artistically significant churches. So what we experienced was a different kind of nourishment. It wasn't so much the journey per se, but being able to see that, to be enriched by sculptures, in particular these sculptures that in from the 12th century churches, and they frequently represented musicians. If you read the story of the 24 elders of the apocalypse, you'll realize that these were a heavenly court in which God presided, surrounded by all these nobles, and they all had musical instruments in one hand and incense in the other. You saw the incense. I saw the musical instruments all along the way, and I have a whole other slideshow about that sometime maybe.
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you. Okay, that was very exciting. That's it for today. I'm loving this book. I'm sure that all of you are. It's made me want to start growing marigolds. And I'm sure you feel the same. Thank you very, very much, Bart.